Reading from Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita, Chapter 3. A very nice person. This is a quote by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj. There has not been, there will not be, such benefactors of the highest merit as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his devotees have been. The offer of other benefits is only a deception. It is rather a great harm. Whereas the benefit done by him and his followers is the truest and greatest eternal benefit. This benefit is not for one particular country causing mischief to another, but it benefits the whole universe. Abai's friend, Narendranath Mulik, was insistent. He wanted Abai to see a sadhu from Mayapur. Naren and some of his friends had already met the sadhu at his nearby ashram on Ultadanga Junction Road. And now they wanted Abai's opinion. Everyone within their circle of friends considered Abai the leader. So if Naran could tell the others that Abai also had a high regard for the sadhu, then that would confirm their own estimations. Abai was reluctant to go, but Naran pressed him. They stood talking amidst the passers-by on the crowded early evening street. As the traffic of horse-drawn hackneys, ox carts, and occasional auto taxis and motor buses moved noisily on the road, Naren put his hand firmly around his friend's arm, trying to drag him forward, while Abai smiled but stubbornly pulled the other way. Naren argued that since they were only a few blocks away, they should at least pay a short visit. Abai laughed and asked to be excused. People could see that the two young men were friends, but it was a curious sight. The handsome young man dressed in white khadi kurta and dhoti being pulled along by his friend. Naren explained that the sadhu, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, was a Vaishnava and a great devotee of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. One of his disciples, a sannyasi, had visited the Mulik house and had invited them to meet Srila Bhakti Siddhanta. A few of the Muliks had gone to see him and had been very much impressed. But Abai remained skeptical. "Oh no, I know these sadhus," he said. "I'm not going." Abai had seen many sadhus in his childhood. Every day his father had entertained at least three or four in his home. Some of them were no more than beggars, and some even smoked ganja. Guru Mohan had been very liberal in allowing anyone who wore the saffron robes of a sannyasi to come. But did it mean that though a man was no more than a beggar or ganja smoker, he had to be considered saintly just because he dressed as a sannyasi or was collecting funds in the name of building a monastery or could influence people with his speech? No. By and large, they were a disappointing lot. Abai had even seen a man in his neighborhood who was a beggar by occupation. In the morning, when others dressed in their work clothes and went to their jobs, this man would put on saffron cloth and go out to beg in this way earn his livelihood. But was it fitting that such a so-called sadhu be paid a respectful visit as if he were a guru? Naren argued that he felt that this particular sadhu was a very learned scholar and that Abai should at least meet him and judge for himself. Abai wished that Naren would not behave this way, but finally he could no longer refuse his friend. Together they walked past the Parsnath Jain temple to one Ultadanga with its sign Bhakti Vinod Asana, announcing it to be the quarters of the Gaudiya mat. When they inquired at the door, a young man recognized Mr. Mulik. Naren had previously given a donation and immediately escorted them up to the roof of the second floor and into the presence of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, who was sitting and enjoying the early evening atmosphere with a few disciples and guests. Sitting with his back very straight, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati appeared tall. He was slender, his arms were long, and his complexion was fair and golden. He wore round bifocals with simple frames. His nose was sharp, his forehead broad, and his expression very, very, very scholarly, yet not at all timid. The vertical markings of Vaishnav Tilak on his forehead were familiar to Abai, as were the simple sannyas robes that draped around his right shoulder, leaving the other shoulder and half his chest bare. He wore tulasi neck beads, and the clay Vaishnav markings of Tilak were visible at his throat, shoulder, and upper arms. A clean white brahminical thread was looped around his neck and draped across his chest. Abai and Naren, having both been raised in Vaishnav families, immediately offered prostrated obeisances at the sight of the revered sannyasi. While the two young men were still rising and preparing to sit, before any preliminary formalities of conversation had begun, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta immediately said to them, "You are educated young men. Why don't you preach Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's message throughout the whole world?" Abai could hardly believe what he had just heard. They had not even exchanged views. Yet this sadhu was telling them what they should do. Sitting face to face with Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, Abai was gathering his wits and trying to gain a comprehensible impression. But this person had already told them to become preachers and go all over the world. Abai was immediately impressed, but he wasn't going to drop his intelligent skepticism. After all, there were assumptions in what the sadhu had said. Abai had already announced himself by his dress to be a follower of Gandhi, and he felt the impulse to raise an argument. Yet as he continued to listen to Srila Bhakti Siddhanta speak, he also began to feel won over by the sadhu's strength of conviction. He could sense that Bhakti Siddhanta didn't care for anything but Lord Chaitanya, and that this was what made him great. This was why followers had gathered around him, and why Abai himself felt drawn, inspired, and humbled, and wanted to hear more. But he felt obliged to make an argument to test the truth. Drawn irresistibly into discussion, Abai spoke up in answer to the words Bhakti Siddhanta had so tersely spoken in the first seconds of their meeting. "Who will hear your Chaitanya's message?" Abai queried. "We are a dependent country. First, India must become independent. How can we spread Indian culture if we are under British rule?" Abai had not asked haughtily, just to be provocative, yet his question was clearly a challenge. If he were to take this sadhu's remark to them as a serious one, and there was nothing in Srila Bhakti Siddhanta's demeanor to indicate that it had not been serious, Abai felt compelled to question how he could propose such a thing while India was still dependent. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta replied in a quiet, deep voice that Krishna consciousness didn't have to wait for a change in Indian politics, nor was it dependent on who ruled. Krishna consciousness was so important, so exclusively important, that it could not wait. Abai was struck by his boldness. How could he say such a thing? The whole world of India, beyond this little Ultadanga rooftop, was in turmoil and seemed to support what Abai had said. Many famous leaders of Bengal, many saints, even Gandhi himself, men who were educated and spiritually minded, all might very well have asked the same question, challenging the sadhu's relevancy. And yet he was dismissing everything and everyone as if they were of no consequence. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta continued, "Whether one power or another ruled was a temporary situation, but the eternal reality of Krishna consciousness and the real self is the spirit soul. No man-made political system, therefore, could actually help humanity. This was the verdict of the Vedic scriptures and the line of spiritual masters. Although everyone is an eternal servant of God, when one takes himself to be the temporary body and regards the nation as his birth, of his birth as worshipable, he comes under illusion. The leaders and followers of the world's political movements, including the movement of Swaraj, were simply cultivating this illusion. Real welfare work, whether individual, social, or political, should help prepare a person for his next life and help him re-establish his eternal relationship with the Supreme." Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati had articulated these ideas many times before in his writings. And there's a quote. "There has not been, there will not be, Such benefactors of the highest merit as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his devotees have been. The offer of other benefits is only a deception. It is rather a great harm. Whereas the benefit done by him and his followers is the truest and greatest eternal benefit. This benefit is not for one particular country causing mischief for another, but it benefits the whole universe. The kindness that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has shown to jivas absolves them eternally from all wants, from all inconveniences, and from all distresses. That kindness does not produce any evil, and the jivas who have it will not be the victims of the evils of the world. Azabai listened attentively to the arguments of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. He recalled a Bengali poet who had written that even less advanced civilizations like China and Japan were independent, and yet India labored under political oppression. Abai knew well the philosophy of nationalism, which stressed that Indian independence had to come first. As an oppressed people was a reality, the British slaughter of innocent citizens was a reality, and independence would benefit people. Spiritual life was a luxury that could be afforded only after independence. In the present times, the cause of national liberation from the British was the only relevant spiritual movement. The people's cause was itself God. Yet because Abai had been raised a Vaishnava, he appreciated what Bhaktisiddhanta was saying. Abai had already concluded that this was certainly not just another questionable sadhu, and he perceived the truth in what Bhaktisiddhanta said. The sadhu wasn't concocting his own philosophy, and he wasn't simply proud or belligerent. Even though he spoke in a way that kicked out practically every other philosophy, he was speaking the eternal teachings of the Vedic literature and the sages, and Abai loved to hear it. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Gaura Premanandi.